When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everybody, to the Boiler Alert Podcast, Sad Edition. I'm here with Ryan Bonaparte. I'm your host, Andrew Ledman. Ryan, how are we doing today? We hanging in there?
Oh, not a great sports weekend. It's just been depressing.
Well, you know, that is true for you, halfway true for me. So Ryan is, of course, a Bears fan. I am, of course, a Buccaneers fan. The two of us, our teams faced off today. Ryan, what happened?
The Chicago Bears imploded and looked terrible for the second straight week.
Yeah, Shaq Barrett returned an interception for a touchdown, so that helped.
Yeah, because you run a screen play on your own 5 yards.
Yeah, it was like the 4 yard. Yeah. He got an interception, returned it for 4 yards for a touchdown. So, luckily, not a lot of work for him there. So takes your Bears to 0-2, and my Bucks to 2-0. I mean, all is right with the world in the NFL for me right now.
Yeah, well, there's a reason I chose Tampa Bay's defense for my fantasy team this week.
Hey, that makes sense to me, too. That makes sense to me, too. I don't know what is going on with that Bears offense, but it is nothing good.
No. No, it is not.
No. And are you familiar with an NFL Survivor League?
I am.
I am in one with some people I used to work at. It actually had my first job out of college, my first, like, real job, which was way back in 2010. So I'm still in contact with some of these people, and I'm in the Survivor League since that time. I've won it one time. There are 69 people in it this year, and I picked the Cowboys in week two, so the Cowboys, of course, won, so I am still alive for now. I think we've got around 20-some people already out. So if you've got any tips, maybe I should just follow and pick whoever plays the Bears.
I mean, that wouldn't work, or that would work the majority of the time.
Yeah, you got to just hope they don't have repeat opponents early in the season, because you can only pick a team once in the Survivor Leagues. I did that 1 year, actually, with when the Browns were, like, really, really bad. I picked their opponent for, like, 6 weeks straight and got through. It was pretty wild. Yep. So, you know, obviously, you know, Purdue did Purdue things and looked absolutely terrible against Syracuse. And that's what we're going to spend the majority of the podcast talking about. But I wanted to talk about something a little more lighthearted before we go to break. So, Ryan, you know, we like to talk about food and desserts on this podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I saw some pretty exciting news for me personally last Thursday or Friday, and I wanted to share it with you and see if you found it as exciting as I do.
Okay. Does it have to do with ice cream?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Are you a fan of the Wendy's Frosty?
Oh, this is not where I thought we were going with this. But yes, I am definitely a fan of the Wendy's Frosty.
Are you a fan of all things pumpkin / pumpkin spice?
Everything but lattes, because I don't like coffee.
I also don't like pumpkin, coffee. I'm good. I also don't like coffee. Bizarre that we've got two people on this podcast who aren't Mormons but don't like coffee. That's a rarity.
Don't like coffee or beer.
Yeah, what? I don't either. This is wild.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that one I didn't know. I think you're just trying to suck up to me.
Nope, I haven't liked beer ever. Don't like liquid bread.
Hey, listen, you're not going to find one single argument from me. It's not the most popular opinion in the world, but I just think beer is terrible. And before people get into our comments and say, well, have you tried this beer? Yes, I've tried 30, 40, 50 different beers, because everyone, when you tell them that you don't like beer, maybe this is your experience too, Ryan, they go, oh, hold on, and they'll hand you a beer, whether it's one they have in their fridge or the what they're drinking at the bar, and they're like, no, taste this one, and then you taste it, and then it tastes like beer.
I mean, that's why my favorite beer of any, if any, is probably Coors or like Natty, because it's the least beer tasting beer. It's the most watered down.
Yeah. Yeah. About the only time I will have a beer is if I'm doing an Irish car bomb.
Okay.
And even that, I don't like love it, but it's just like you got to just take it down real fast. So that is how I get through it. But we're getting off topic. We're getting off topic.
Yes.
Wendy's announced that they're having a pumpkin spice frosty. And yeah, I couldn't be happier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Purdue plays next on Friday, actually. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I got my weeks all confused, yeah. So we are probably going to record a day earlier than normal to kind of keep on the schedule of giving you enough time to listen before the game. So that means we're going to be recording likely on Tuesday. So I'm hoping between now and Tuesday I can get one of these and report back on how delicious it is, because I tell you, I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Wendy's usually does pretty good things with the Frosty. I know when they released the green Frosty, which was basically a Shamrock Shake, I enjoyed it. But yeah, Wendy's does pretty good with those specialty Frosties.
Yeah, yeah. Were you, what ice cream were you thinking of? Did you see some big ice cream news that I've missed?
I thought you were talking about the new Purdue ice cream.
Oh, yes. Yes, that is exciting. And I wonder, so for those that didn't see, they're going to have two, or I guess they do have now, two Purdue ice cream flavors. One is like a caramel chip, and one is just a vanilla. And they're going to be serving that at least at one football game. You're going to be able to find it at a couple places on campus. I don't know that they're going to have it by the time I'm there for the football game in November against Minnesota. Just because, you know, most people don't eat ice cream in November. I do, because ice cream is delicious. But if they have it in the stadium in November, I am definitely going to try it.
I think they will. And I say that because during this game this weekend, they had they gave samples to some people. Like, there was a big thing in the crowd where they gave the ice cream as a reward.
Okay.
So, definitely hopeful.
Yeah, I'm now very hopeful. And the article I read said they were just going to start selling it at football games, starting with the game against Syracuse, but it didn't give an end date, so I don't know. So we'll see. But I'm very excited to try it if I get the opportunity when I'm there in November. So, Ryan, any other ice cream news or anything like that before we take a break? Anything you want to say about the Bears?
No.
Or Aaron Rodgers?
Nope. Well, we thought the bad man was out of the division, but the bad man may end up being whoever the Bears head coach is.
Oh, poor Bears. Actually, you know, I've always kind of held a grudge against the Bears because of the way they treated Kyle Orton. The whole him and Jay Cutler situation. I always thought Orton got a lot of crap for that, because that offense didn't have any weapons whatsoever. I mean, that was a defensive team. Everyone knows that. And then suddenly, like, oh no, if we just put in Cutler, it'll really turn us around. It's like, come on. It wasn't Orton's fault.
The Bears have a tendency to do that to players. Matt Forte, Robbie Gould, Lance Briggs, Brian Urlacher. I mean, as morbid as it sounds, I cannot wait for Virginia McCaskey to go.
Why?
She's the owner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she's, I think, 98 years old.
Is she the owner, but does she actually make decisions, or is she just like, is she an active owner or not?
Yeah, and the people making decisions are her kids.
Oh, never good.
Yeah, so it's a family organization. I'm putting massive air quotes right now. So, believe me, I wish they would sell the team, build a new stadium, get Jeff Bezos to pay for it and call it Prime Stadium or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you know, that leads me, I had another question written down and I spaced on it until you said Prime. What do we think about Coach Prime at Colorado, Deion Sanders? I mean, completely flipped a roster, has now won both of his games this season. I mean, do we think this is something he's going to sustain, or are they going to, you know, hit the rest of their schedule and run into a bit of a wall?
I mean, his kid's a pretty good quarterback. I just love saying his kid's name, Shadur. It's incredible what he's doing. I don't know how sustainable it is. And let's be honest, he hasn't faced any world beaters quite yet. We'll kind of have to save judgment for when he plays Oregon and USC back-to-back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everybody thought it was going to be TCU in their first week was going to be a tough challenge, but it turns out TCU just lost too much after last season, so we don't really know much about them. But I was just shocked at how dumb the Colorado State coach was for giving Deion Sanders any ammunition. Like, making fun of the hat and sunglasses thing. It's like, buddy, this guy is an insane competitor who will take anything you say about him as a slight. I mean, why would you say anything to him? It's like peak Michael Jordan. You know, you watch the Last Dance, or you hear players just in interviews who played with Jordan talking about, you know, he came up to me and said, how dare you say that to me? I'm going to score 40 on you. And then the player's like, what is he talking about? I never said anything to him. And then after the game, Jordan will be like, oh yeah, I just made that up. You know, I had to motivate myself. So like, why would you give a person like that ammunition? I just don't understand it.
Yeah. So it's funny actually, because Deion Sanders is like the good side of nepotism with his kids who are actually like good at the sport. Right. I mean, I know his second son actually had a pick six this week too. So it's definitely a lot better than the Iowa situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we're gonna keep an eye on the Iowa situation just out of morbid curiosity to see how they're doing offensively, to see if Brian Ferentz is going to get his bonus, or I guess not a bonus, to get his salary back. So we'll see how that
76.
Goes.
76. That's 76 offensive points.
Okay. And how many do they need at this point?
So far, 75.
Okay, so they're right there. They're on the mountain climber, you know, just above the line.
Yeah, and it took a 39-point outburst. Now, I don't count the safety or the pick six in these numbers.
I wonder if the contract does. I didn't actually read the fine print of the contract.
My understanding was that it was offensive output.
Yeah, that makes sense. He is the offensive coordinator. Yeah.
I mean, if not, they are above it. But still, even with the added 9 points from your defense, your margin for error is not that great. And you don't play any more non-conference games anymore.
Yeah, the schedule is about to heat up for Iowa and for the rest of the Big Ten. So I think we've delayed enough. I can't think of any other way to waste our time. So let's go ahead and we'll take our break, come back, and then we'll look ahead. Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. We'll look back to the game against Syracuse. I wish we could look ahead, but we got to look
almost
back first.
Had it.
Yeah, I almost got through it. We'll be right back. And we are back. So Ryan and I talked about this before we started recording, and we're going to do this podcast a little differently. We're going to do an optimistic side and a pessimistic side. And we decided, since it's probably going to be a little bit shorter, we're going to do the optimistic side first. And I want to preface this by saying this is something that I personally struggle with, because I am the person that runs the Hammer and Rails Facebook account, the Hammer and Rails Twitter account, and you know, for the last couple years, every tweet you've seen has been from me. I can't claim ownership, you know, much further back than that, but for the last couple years, it's been me. And there's a strange phenomenon on Twitter, at least sports Twitter, of you basically, it's like everybody has to choose a side. You're either all in on this team and Ryan Walters is going to bring us to the promised land and he's a great coach and blah, 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 or Ryan Walters is the next coming, second coming of Daryl Hazel and needs to be fired and we need to just replace everyone in the athletic department and blah, blah, blah. And if you mention any nuance, you get pilloried. And the answer obviously is somewhere in between. I mean, we don't know enough about Ryan Walters at this point. So I struggle to, like, what kind of tone do I take on Twitter? Because I don't want to be always incredibly negative, because there are good things. But at the same time, I don't want to blow smoke at people. You know, I want to try to be honest and have an actual dialogue. But that can just be so hard on the internet. Ryan, do you find that is a similar problem for you as well?
Yes, and it's even harder when you know that you have to put out content, kind of laying out how a game went.
Exactly.
And you don't want to inject too much of your own opinion in there. Of course, we always do. We're all homers here. But yeah, it's a fine line of how much do I really want to relay a story, or how much do I want to tell it through my lens? So I completely agree that it is a difficult balance. I do not envy you with running the Twitter sometimes, just for the sheer fact that it's so polarizing on that website that people will come after you if you say the wrong thing, or even if you don't say the wrong thing, but simply don't take a stand. So it's not the easiest in the world, but it's definitely comes with the territory.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think we're usually pretty well up to the task.
Yeah, I mean, I think we try to find a good balance of positive and negative. But man, in this one, it sure is hard, to find a lot to hang our hats on. So you were at the game, you were in the press box. I will let you go first with something you found a positive in, because I'm not sure how many there's going to be. So I wanted to give you the opportunity first.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, are we going to allow me to keep going into the press box?
Yeah, you've now covered, since you came on to Hammer and Rails, you have covered 3 football games for us, right?
Yes.
And what is Purdue's record in those 3 football games?
So they have not won, and 2 of them were very disappointing. Well, yeah. I would say all 3 were pretty well disappointing, but 2 of them were very outmatched.
Yeah, yeah. Outmatched is a fun way of saying it. Considering your first game you covered for us was last year's Cheez-It Bowl against LSU.
Yeah, so it's been a experience, that's for sure. And not to mention, I was the only Hammer and Rails writer at the round of 64.
Oh, God.
So are we allowing me to go to things anymore?
Yeah, I really think we might want
to... I was at the winning of the Big Ten championship, though, in Chicago.
Yeah.
So I got 1 under my belt.
I might have to have a conversation with Drew, the co-manager, and see if we need to make some hard choices. I mean, I like you as a person, Ryan, but I will throw you under a bus if it means Purdue will win.
So if we need a certain team to lose, just send me just the send
you that. Yeah, maybe we can get you embedded in another site.
Okay.
Maybe gotcha. You think we can get you hired in Wisconsin's group before Friday?
I mean, get on the phone with Bucky and their cohort, so.
We'll see what we can do. So, yeah, you've had some very bad luck, but I'm a firm believer that it's not you. It's going to be all right. They'll turn it around eventually, I hope.
Would you say you're optimistic?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, give me one thing at least, and then we can go back and forth maybe on something you were optimistic about coming away from Saturday's debacle, which, in case you are listening to this and don't know, Purdue lost 35-20, and it wasn't that close.
Right. I was optimistic about Purdue's passing game. I mean, outside of his interception, which was just a slight overthrow of a receiver. He led him a little bit too far, and the ball got tipped back into the arms of a defender. Hudson Card played very well with throwing the ball. He had a lot of very precise throws that only his receiver could catch. Now, with the 5-3-3 concept, there was some space everywhere, it seemed, but he made the throws he needed to make, and I think I counted 3 throws that were not great throws, and he threw the ball almost 40 times.
Yeah.
So that's a very nice percentage. I mean, he only had 1 touchdown pass, but that's sometimes just the nature of the game. And he had over 300 yards passing. So he played well in the pocket. I think he moved very well, and he was very, very decisive of whether to run or whether just to throw the ball away, which is something we've always wanted out of Hudson Card.
Right.
I think that's the sole bright spot was his passing game, but I think that is where you want to have a bright spot if there's only one.
Yeah, yeah, and obviously we can save the rest of his game for the second half of this part of the podcast. I agree with you. I think Card threw some really good balls, yeah, especially some deep balls that were just not caught by his receivers. They were put in... They were put in a great spot where only his receivers could get him, as you said. And that's what you want when you're taking a shot like that. You know, Purdue just, I mean, how many times did Syracuse throw the ball down the field versus Purdue went sideline to sideline? So when Card did throw it deep, I thought he threw it very well. As you said, too, largely his decision-making was good. Obviously, you know, he did get intercepted. And we can talk about the rest of his game later. But from a deciding when to tuck in and run perspective, I thought he did a good job. So I agree with you there. The one I want to highlight is a wide receiver, Abdul-Rahman Yassin. Had absolutely the best game of his career. 10 catches, 114 yards with a long of 25, and was absolutely really dependable. I think I can only remember one catch that he did not haul in. And the commentators even made a note to point it out that it was kind of shocking that he dropped it. They were calling him Mr. Dependable, I think, or Mr. Reliable. Yes. I can't remember the words they used. But I mean, it's great to see him. He's struggled to stay healthy. He's had a very, very hard time, staying in the lineup. And it's great if we can get Hudson Card, a guy who can go down as like a possession receiver, a guy who you know you can throw to and you know who can hang on to the ball. So an emergence of Yassin would be great for this Purdue team.
Absolutely. The other thing that I'm kind of neutral about, just because it wasn't really brought or it wasn't really put into a position of where they had to shine, was the interior defensive line. They've been very good this season so far. It's just Syracuse did not run inside almost at all this weekend, so they didn't really have the ability to shine. But had they needed to make a stand, I think they would have.
I don't know. I just don't know.
So we'll call that a neutral.
Yeah, I suppose. Let's see. I mean, anything else good that we can come up with? I thought Sanusi Kane played all right, made some good hits. Thieneman was all over the field, as always. Cam Allen got another interception. You know, he's good at finding the ball. Now he's got 12 in his career. So those are all good things. You know, Skorton, I thought, did a great job getting in the backfield. So did Jenkins before he got injured and left the field there. So that is not great. The only other thing I think is worth mentioning to me and the positive is Will Held came in, and I thought he looked really good for the time he was in there. He was fast. He was quick to the ball. He was aggressive. He looked strong. And he really, I think, is going to be ready a lot sooner than people think.
Yeah, the only issue I had with Will Held was he seemed to bite down a little bit too hard on some read options that kind of allowed some free runners. That seemed to be the majority of the defense who did that too, so it's not just Will Held, but
yeah,
you're right. He did look athletic and pretty quick out there, if nothing else.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I'll take those things, put them in my back pocket, and say, you know, that's maybe the best we can do for now. This game was just terrible. Terrible from the gate. I mean, Purdue looked like they had a good drive going initially, and then this goes into the coaching decision-making. You know, decided to go for it on 4th-and-1, down within the 10-yard line, and Hudson Card fumbles, obviously it was, you know, he wasn't going to get the first down anyway, so it would have been a turnover. Turnover's a turnover, whether it's a fumble or on downs, but they don't take the points. And ultimately, those points loomed large at one point when Purdue was down 28-20, because if it's 28-23, it's a whole new ball game, and Purdue just needs to score a touchdown. I don't know if that would have changed the play calling, changed the decision making, but Purdue just, you know, took points off the board there. So it was an ugly game. And Ryan, I'll let you go first, but I know what I think you're going to say is the obvious flaw in this game, the worst pessimistic thing about the game.
The most pessimistic. I mean, it's got to be the rush defense. When the opposing quarterback can rush for 195 yards on you, what are you going to do? I mean, in my game wrap, I actually brought up the Louisville game against Lamar Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he only rushed for 107 against Purdue.
Yeah, Purdue, I was at that game. Purdue actually did a really good job of slowing down Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, that did not carry over into the Walters era, at least for against Garrett Schrader.
Yeah.
So that's the defensive pessimism. And then the other one is, it's like a 1A, 1B. It's ball handling. I mean, seven fumbles?
Yeah.
Seven.
And it was only two people.
Players. Yeah. So now Hudson Cards is, I will give him a little bit of leeway.
I'll give him a leeway on one of them.
He had. Oh, okay. And which one is that? The blindside?
Yeah, the blindside block. Blindside hit on him. I mean, he had no idea he was there. Our left tackle just completely. I think it was just a missed block, or they sent too many. They didn't pick up a blitz.
They
can't remember.
Six.
Yeah.
They sent six, and there were only five.
And Purdue just had nobody there. The backfield was empty, nobody to chip him, and he just destroyed Hudson Card, and Card had no chance. That fumble, I mean, you don't love it. You don't love any fumble, but that one you can at least understand, because that was what they call, you know, a lookout block, and he didn't have a chance.
Yeah. Yeah, so the first fumble, we already mentioned it, it was going to be a turnover on downs anyway. So it was unfortunate that he got credited with that fumble too. It's like, just add insult to injury,
right,
on it.
Right.
And then the third one, on when they were driving into Syracuse territory, which I think every single fumble and turnover was in Syracuse territory.
Yeah.
All four of them.
Mm-hmm.
It was a play action play, and I think it was Tracy on the play action actually knocked the ball out of his hand. So I don't know. I give that a little bit of leeway there. Like, that's something you should definitely know how to do, but it's not necessarily all on Hudson Card there.
Yeah, I get that. I get that, and that's fair. But at the same time, if you're running the RPO and you're the quarterback, you've got to be forceful with your decisions. And I think he was a little hesitant on that. And, you know, if the running back isn't sure of what you're doing and the decision that you've made, they're going to run. You know, they're going to try to take that ball and go, because they don't know at that moment, is he giving me the ball? Is he going to take it back? And you've got to be so clear with your decision making. And I just think he was a little hesitant there. It might have been one where there was a bad snap, because Purdue had a couple bad snaps during the game. But yeah, I mean, still three fumble. I mean, he fumbled four times, lost three of them. And it was like there was butter or Crisco on the ball, man. Just outrageous.
Maccabees, I can make no excuses.
Yeah. Maccabee just, he looked like he was carrying a loaf of bread home for his mom.
Yeah. It's to the point where you almost wonder if he's going to lose what little snaps he currently gets, just because, right now the rushing game is just, it's like a Jeff Brohm era, rushing game. It's just not there. Whether or not it's inside rushes that Purdue cannot get any movement on,
no,
especially if you're coming out of the shotgun, that or just the failure to recognize that you have to do an outside run game or read option game.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much to just complain about with that, with the decision making, the lack of execution in the rushing game. We don't have that much podcast time.
No.
There's a lot of issues. I need to see improvement from Graham Harrell.
Yeah.
And yeah. How he devises his game plan. And some of that comes down in Ryan Walters. If you're the head coach, you can say, I want to run this style of offense.
Right.
Make it work, Graham Harrell. And it also comes down to, if you're the head coach, Devin Mockbee, you fumbled 3 times. We're going to run the ball with Tyrone Treacy. And that's exactly what he did. And Purdue scored their final touchdown with Tyrone Treacy, who, you know, at that point it almost looked like they were sparking a little bit. So if changes aren't made, I don't know how lenient you can be on the coaching staff.
Oh, no.
But if you try to make a change and the same thing is happening, at what point do you say, well, Devin Mockamy is still a sophomore, and, you know, then the excuses of, well, Ryan Walters doesn't have the level of talent he needs quite yet. That's kind of just what the roadmap of this whole thing is going to be. You're always going to find a scapegoat, but at some point you need to solve these problems.
Yeah. Yeah, and to go back to what you kind of started with there, I mean, Devin Mockbee, 3 fumbles, somehow lost none of them. He got very lucky that the last one was reviewed and mm-hmm. rightly overturned, that, you know, a Purdue player touched it while they were out of bounds. I think it was Deion Burks. And so it ultimately was Purdue ball. So we got lucky with that one, but he is just not taking care of the football. I don't know if he feels an added pressure to kind of make an extra move and make guys miss and try to get extra yards. But, man, he's really struggling, and I hate to see it because, you know, he's been such a great player during his limited time at Purdue, a fan favorite. Mm-hmm. You love just his story in general. And to see him struggle like this really, really stinks. You know, it's difficult to watch. He fumbled. Was it in the Fresno State game he fumbled, but Purdue recovered as well? Yeah, so he's now fumbled, I believe, 4 times on this.
Second snap of the season.
Yeah, so he's fumbled 4 times on the season. Hasn't lost any of them, I want to be clear. But that is not going to keep up. I mean, if you fumble 4 more times, I think the odds are pretty low you're going to recover 4 more fumbles. But Purdue, right. This goes to your talk about coaching and play calling. Purdue has got to figure out third down and short.
Yeah.
I mean, third down and 1 might as well be third down and 30 for this squad. They cannot mm-hmm. pick up a yard when they need it. And they seem to be running the exact same play every time. I mean, my wife came down last night after putting our son to bed, and I don't even remember what it was. Obviously we were watching the game, and it was third and 1 or 2 near the goal line and something like that. And I said, I swear to God, if they run it just slightly to the left of center, I'm going to scream. And sure enough, we run it just slightly left of center, lose a yard or half a yard. And mm-hmm. I was just like, I wanted to scream into my pillow or just at the top of my lungs. But again, 3-year-old upstairs asleep, so I was not about to do that. Right. But man, it's just, it is so predictable. And
mm-hmm.
like, things can be predictable if they work, but this yep. isn't working. So why are you continuously going back to it? And I know we previously talked about, well, it's not that they're always trying to run inside, it's that they're being funneled from the outside to the inside by the defense. Okay, you're an offensive coordinator, figure it out.
Yep.
Like, I don't get paid $1 million to do this, and I can tell you what they're going to run. Imagine what the defensive coordinator on your opponent thinks, who is getting paid, you know, 6 figures, maybe $1 million, to figure out what you're going to run. If I can figure it out watching from my couch, what is this guy doing? We've got to be less predictable, and we've got to find a way to get a yard on third down, or fourth down for that matter. But man,
yeah.
this third down and short situation is so maddening.
Right. I will say in this game, they did not run the ball every time on third and fourth and one. They did have a couple passes. The turnover that Card ended up fumbling on fourth and one. That was supposed to be a pass out in the flat to Deion Burks. He got held up. I think he ran into one of his teammates, actually. And then Card just scrambled and ended up fumbling. You had the final turnover on downs, which was on fourth and one. That was a pass that just got broken up. It was good defense. So I think they're starting to try to go away with the run on the third and fourth and short, but why are they continuing to run the ball out of shotgun?
Yeah.
I wasn't on board with this last week.
Yeah, me either.
Just because I am fully, fully on board now. Like, you need to go under center and sneak the ball, or you need to just have some sort of read option to the outside. It is absolutely possible. The other question that I have is, why are they not using Dylan Downing?
I mean, they're using him a little.
Rush. Yeah, from what I understand, Dylan Downing is the bruiser of the running back room. It's not Tracy. It's not Maccabee. It is Dylan Downing, and he only had a single rush in this game. And I could have told you he could have been used a couple more times. So,
yeah, Purdue has got to find a way to get push, to get better blocking, to have a run game that is serviceable. Mm-hmm. And with Gus Hartwig out again for the Syracuse game, they just continue to struggle, and I don't know what they can do to change that up. I was looking at the Purdue roster because I'm trying to remember this guy's name. He's a young running back, and he supposedly just like built almost like a linebacker or a fullback, but you know, I think he's a true freshman and has not yet played, but there was talk that maybe he would be able to come in and do something this year. Mondrell Dean. Yeah. He's a 6'3", 240 pounds. He was getting a lot of press in the summer and in the preseason as a guy who really surprised, and he's a big guy and he's a bruiser, and I don't know why we can't just throw him in as maybe use him as a fullback position, use him as an extra blocker, whatever we need to do. Maybe he's bad at blocking. I don't know. We've not seen him in live action, so maybe he still doesn't have the technique down, and that is a justifiable reason. But my goodness, we've got to do something.
Yeah. So one of the other issues I did notice while kind of reviewing the game, at least on a couple of the plays, the pressure that stopped the run on third and one was not from the interior either. It is the outside linebackers crashing down on the running back, and it's because you're in shotgun.
Right.
Now, my question starts to spur, what's going to happen when Purdue returns Garrett Miller or Paul Perferri, who did not play in this game either?
Right.
So we like to think that you're going to have these answers to our questions when the offensive line and the tight end position is healthy. But what happens if that doesn't work either? I'd like to think the coaching staff at least has a secondary plan outside of, hey, we just need healthy guys. And I don't think that's too much to ask for.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, for those who are longtime Purdue fans, you'll know, of course, that Purdue had multiple offensive linemen transfer who are expected to be contributors and even starters, or multiple offensive linemen who retired following back injuries last year and into this year. So I want to say combined with those two scenarios, Purdue lost about four guys, and that is tough to recover from. And, you know, Ryan Walters and staff tried to do everything they could to fill the holes and bridge the gaps, but it hasn't happened.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not trying to insult anybody who's on the roster or anything, but they're just not getting the job done. And it is such an important position that unless there's an upgrade coming or, you know, someone in a redshirt year, you know, suddenly impresses and jumps into the starting lineup, or we can bend some NCAA rules somehow and bring in some transfers right now. Yeah. I don't know that it's going to get better. That is not something, you know, you can improve technique. You can get a little better as the year goes on, but I'm not sure you can get that much better.
Yeah. All right. I don't know if it's a fully out of my system, but now that we've kind of dumped on every phase of the game, minus special teams, who, by the way, missed an extra point.
But that was not the kicker's fault. It was a terrible snap, terrible hold. The laces were in, to quote Ray Finkel.
Mm. Yeah. Well, glazing over that, are you ready to talk about the referees?
Oh, my God, they were so bad.
Oh, boy. It's to the point where I actually had to put a section about the referees in the game wrap. That's how you know they are that bad for this game.
And before we get into this conversation, I want to make it clear, and I think you would agree, Purdue did not lose the game because of the refs. Purdue lost the game because they could not stop Schrader from not only running all over them, but falling for every fake he did for that. I don't remember if it was the first or second touchdown, when he basically could have crawled like a baby into the end zone. I mean, he had so much time. There was no one over there. Everyone fell for it. It was absolutely pathetic. So Purdue did not lose because of the refs. So I want to make that clear. That being said, they were atrocious.
Yeah. Last time I checked, if you're blocked into the quarter...
Oh, my God, yeah.
Not roughing the quarterback.
Yeah.
Also, if a ball is 10 feet above your head, it's uncatchable and therefore not pass interference.
Yeah, that was at least three plays, I think, for Purdue that they got called pass interference that were clearly just uncatchable balls.
Yeah, and two of them were on Cam Allen. Yeah. I actually felt bad for Cam Allen for a second there.
Which takes a lot for the two of us.
Yes, I mean, he did not do something wrong twice in a row and got flagged for it. And then the other one was Bostros.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean... The roughing the passers were so soft. As you said, we got blocked into the quarterback on one occasion. It happened to Syracuse as well. They got called for one in a very similar circumstance. But then we also had one where our player barely touched the quarterback's helmet and got called for it. And it was just, I mean, as people said on Twitter, you know, it's technically the rule, but they're enforcing the letter of the rule and not the spirit of it. He didn't go after his head. He didn't even hit him. It was like his arms were up and they just happened to come down and glance off his helmet. And that's not what the rule's about. And the refs should know that.
Mm-hmm. And I know it's very difficult to say this and not sound whiny about it.
Yeah, right.
But there was a couple times, especially on the Garrett Schrader, the 35-yard touchdown run, there was a clear hold that you could see on replay that was just missed. And I'm doing my best. I know that happens in every game. And as we said, this is not why Purdue lost. But the refs did not help Purdue dig out of their hole. They dug it a little bit deeper.
Yeah, yeah.
So just had to get that last little vent out.
Yeah, yeah. And I think overall, I mean, no one came out of this game, except for maybe Yassine, covered in glory from the Purdue side. I mean, there were mistakes all around, you know, the turnovers, man. And the coaching staff with some pretty bad play calling. The referees were very bad. But I just, it is very hard to watch a game like that. Nothing good came out of it, so... I want this team to be healthy, and I want them to actually improve. I want to see something out of this staff, because I think the staff is a very good staff. I am a bit worried about our offensive coordinator right now, but maybe given time, it'll turn around. But I'm not optimistic about him right now. But, man, just a terrible game. So, Ryan, any final thoughts before we get out of here? I think we've depressed everyone enough on this version of the pod.
Maybe playing on a Friday will give us the mojo we need there to finally beat Wisconsin.
There you go. It'll be like back to their high school days.
Right. So, yeah. Who knows? New yeah. coach? Yeah. Confidence is not at an all-time high.
No. Confidence is cratering, but, we're still going to be there on Friday. We're still going to be watching our Boilermakers, enjoying every minute of it, cursing, screaming, mm-hmm. Yelling, hollering, probably doing some drinking if you're not working the game like Ryan, but, overall, we're already three games into the season, 25% of the way through, so let's just, mm-hmm. Let's try to enjoy it. We're looking at the growth of a new program, new head coach, so let's try to find a little bit of positive, but also be realistic out there. So, for Ryan and myself, thanks so much for listening. We'll come back with you a day earlier than normal as we look ahead to Wisconsin.